Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I've dedicated the whole show, really, to an interview I did with artist, that is, fine artist, painter, sculptor, writer, actor, Gail Fulton Ross. Gail represents what I am trying to do with this show, a person who is completely and wholly who she really is. And because of that, the interview was a great deal of fun for me, and I expect it will be a great deal of fun for you. So hang on, here come the show. Welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is all about discovering and becoming who you really are. If you've been listening to the show, you know that I believe that all of us are pretending that some of the things that are true of us are not. We're keeping secrets about who we are, not only from others, but from ourselves as well. And this show is dedicated to helping you figure out what might be getting between you and becoming who you are, and what you can do to discover those things that you might be keeping secret from yourself. Often, at the beginning of the show, I talk about that, and then I play an interview that I've recorded with someone who is making his or her life or living with their art. Today, I'm going to spend almost the entire show playing an interview I did with artist, that is, artist with a capital A, painter, fine artist, sculptor, writer, actor, and enjoyer of life, Gail Fulton Ross. And when you listen to Gail, you know that you are hearing someone who has known since before she could talk that she was and would always be an artist. And so becoming a wife or a mother, having to work at other things, nothing ever dulled her connection to her essential self, which is her art. And I interview people like Gail in the hopes that you will see what it feels like, experience what it sounds like when you're in the presence of someone who is completely and wholly who they are. Not only do you get all the information about how Gail discovered this, nurtured it, fought for it, kept it, but you see the joy, the delight, the pleasure that comes with being who you really are, even when there are sacrifices to be made and prices to be paid. So here, the very, very real Gail Fulton Ross. Okay, so I'm here with Gail Fulton Ross in her studio on Siesta Key, this adorable little space in which she works, I'm assuming. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And I have just explained to her that I do this Anatomy of an Artist interview series, and I interview people who make their living or their life with their art, and Gail said, that's me.
Totally.
As I well know. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to ask you what I ask everybody.
Okay.
And that is, how did it happen? Mm-hmm. How did it find you? How did you find it? Mm-hmm. How did it occur? How did you become it?
Okay. I am an artist who knew that's what I wanted to be from the time I was a child.
Yeah.
What was good about it was that I was encouraged. My father, who was a frustrated artist, designed the Cadillac that had the fins. He was a body and fender man, but they used his designs to create the fin for the Cadillac.
Wow.
My father kept a small studio in the coal bin of our home in New England. So there would be a drafting table and with a light, single light bulb hanging above it. And he had cleaned it all out, and he would sit there with his tools of design trade, again, even though that's not what his training was. And I would sit with him and do my thing, and he recognized my talent. And so one day, I must have been 6, maybe 7, I heard him introduce me as his baby artist, and that was it. From then on, if someone said, "And what, little girl, what are you going to be when you grow up?" I'd say, an artist. Just to tell you a funny story, as a child, they would put my coloring books on the porch so I'd go out and play. That's how serious I was about my future profession.
So you're a kid, and your father, who I'm assuming wasn't really able to follow his dream artist, right?
No.
He determined that he was going to give essentially to his daughter what he didn't have, which was permission, encouragement, right?
Absolutely.
Make it up, right? That's really lovely.
Absolutely.
And so did you go to school?
We went to a special high school that prepared young people who wanted to go into the arts. It helped you prepare a portfolio so that you actually had something when you went to art school.
So fortunately, they had such a school. They don't that everywhere.
No, they don't. And it's just that people who were not going into the arts went there too. But it was art comprehensive. In other words, it did prepare young people who wanted to go into the arts. And so our curriculum was slightly different. It had more emphasis in art, so because we had to prepare a portfolio, so we had to be strong in our drawings and strong in our creativity and our thought, and so it encouraged all that. It really did.
So you created a portfolio in high school.
I had to create a portfolio in high school. The kink in that armor, which is why I say my life has been orchestrated by something more powerful than me. I also got pregnant and got married, and was married by the time I was 17.
Ah.
So I have...
Busy creating something else.
Yes, exactly. That's my best creation, though, is my son. So that changed how I went to college, even though I had a four-year scholarship renewable to Massachusetts Art College, because I got married, that scholarship went away.
They didn't let...
No, no. So I had to, because remember, this is going back in the 60s. This, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't quite acceptable.
To be a married college student?
To be so young and be married.
Oh, my God.
No.
No, they would rather you had been a single mother.
Exactly.
Oh, my.
Just about. Because they assume that, okay, if I'm married, then now the...
Everything that goes with it.
It was just different.
Yeah, okay. Right. You'd have to do the wife thing now.
Exactly.
You're right.
So I managed to get through art school. I got through Mass Art with a bachelor's in fine arts. Then we moved to California, and I got through California College of Arts and Crafts with a master's in fine arts. So I did all of it, not quite the easiest way, which is the way that was planned ahead, but... life gets in the way of the best plan.
Yes, it does, but it doesn't stop you.
No, no. Oh, no.
Right, it doesn't stop you. So I'm assuming that your husband also encouraged this, also was pleased that you were an artist.
No.
Of course, that couldn't be that simple.
No. My father did, my husband and my friend, not so much.
Yeah.
Because we were young and there was a lot to struggle for,
right.
And you know, financially it was difficult, and it's hard to explain to people how important making art could be to the person who wants to make it, and how you can, you know, you ask them to hold on while you promise to be good enough to make a living, and all they know is that right now they require that you go get a job and do something that brings it in right then and there. So, you know, those were tough years.
Oof.
Those were very tough years. And I was offered opportunities to study in Europe, and I couldn't take advantage of them. And so that made it hard for me. But eventually, by the time my son was 17, I was able to do all of that.
You didn't want to do anything else, clearly.
No.
Right. And so... that 17 years that you were raising your son, you were studying, clearly.
But I had a little job. I mean, I always had a little something because I had to pay for myself to go through school. So between paying for myself to go through school, trying to be the good mother, the good wife, the good daughter, the good student, the good everything, it was a very good lesson because I know you can't do all that stuff.
No.
But it's so some things fell by the wayside.
You know, I'm fond of saying you can have it all, you just can't have it all at the same time.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And so I had little jobs, and I'd lose them. In New York, for a brief time, I had a job with the Children's Television Workshop and managed to be an associate producer for a show called The Electric Company.
Oh, my God.
Well, Children's Television Workshop was also Sesame Street.
Yeah, I know.
And they were very wonderful people. Now, it wasn't that I had a degree or an interest in broadcast in those days, because Sesame Street was an educational program and I was being trained for the curriculum aspects of it, teaching, what do you teach, the research, the development. But I told you what I always wanted to be, so they gave me an expense account and I was using it to buy art supplies, so I didn't get to keep that job.
Nothing if not flexible
exactly.
And resourceful.
Exactly. So, you know, it's been a very interesting way to get to who I am and where I am and what I am. A lot of fun. The longest place I've ever lived is right here in Sarasota, Florida. Before that, I lived in France for 2 years, Germany for a year, Barbados for 6 months.
Sampled it all,
yeah,
did you?
I've been a lot of China.
Really, I just want you to hear that she chose Sarasota.
Yeah, and I chose Sarasota. You know, there was a price to pay for that, but...
How did you wind up here?
I had a show in New York, mm-hmm. And a dealer here, Paul Bartholomew, he liked the work and brought me down, and I would come every January and February and show in his gallery, and my work was appreciated, and I loved coming here, and I'd just go, why am I struggling like this? I could have a place here. So after about 6-7 years of coming here and showing, I found a little studio. I'd still go to L.A. or I'd still go to wherever my Craig Jr. was. Mm-hmm. And I'd go to New York maybe for a couple of months. And they eventually gave up the apartment. And I've been here ever since.
Yeah, it's wonderful, isn't it?
Yeah, it's spiritual. It's, you know, there are qualities here that make one understand how blessed they are, because some people require more material things. If you go into the arts, you can't possibly require material things. So my requirements tend to be water and sun and light. So those are gifts to, you know, to what I do.
Right.
And it's sort of the free supply.
It's all, it's wherever you go, wherever you turn, it's here.
Exactly.
Right.
So I could have struggled in New York and made a bigger name for myself, been in a lot of books, because once New York is where people gather to mm-hmm. do what I do. And that's all, not only the artists, but the people who write about the artists, which is necessary.
Right.
Your New York Times critics are not in Sarasota, they're in New York. And your museum curators that are the contemporary museum critics are not here. They're in New York. So I've missed a lot. But that's okay, because the trade-off was, I think, for me, a healthier life.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I hear. And the thrust of the show is becoming who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons I interview artists is because people who become artists in this culture has to be who they are. Nobody would choose. No, you know, yeah. You really, it has to be, and it's so clear that you have not only known since you were very little,
mm-hmm.
but continue to make these choices that really reflect who you are.
Yes.
It's not just, well, this would be efficient, or this would be, you know, this would be the right choice somehow. Mm-hmm. You're always making the choice that comes from your gut,
yes.
that says, this is who I am, and this is what I need.
Yeah.
It's really wonderful.
And if there's a downside to that, you never quite get to live in the moment, because I'm always thinking about what I have to do next.
Talk about that a little bit.
And so I'd say that's the hardest part. Although now that I'm into my 60s, I tend to find ways to live in the moment, because I realize, even though I have always said I am what I do, which is the arts, and it feels very true, that's not the way to get through life. Because there's so many other wonderful moments outside of my art that I tend to want to look at more. For instance, I have a son who, you know, is planning at some point in the near future getting married and having a family. He lives in Los Angeles. And I'm living in Sarasota. Well, I know that I'm not going to want to be that far away from my son if he has children. I want to be there to help. I want to be grandma. They don't need me 24/7.
No. And you don't necessarily need to be there.
No.
That's the other thing.
That's right.
Because you have a life.
Yes.
You know,
and a career.
And a career. Well, that was what I meant, actually. I meant your life, however much you want to be with your family, yeah. they are not your life.
No.
You have a life.
Exactly.
Right.
And I also raised my son to have a life.
Mm-hmm.
Because I always thought, you know, you can't raise them to keep them. You have to raise them to go away from you.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same thing.
That's right.
You know, I just know that part of having a good life is inclusive,
yes,
not exclusive. And much of my life as an artist has been sort of, I've utilized a lot of my artistic time not being inclusive.
Well, you know, it's funny. What I was going to say is, it sounds like you had to fight so hard.
Yes, still do.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And while I'm thinking about those early years where you couldn't have it, mm-hmm. so you really, you had to... right. You had to husband it.
Yeah.
You know, you had to exclude in order to have it.
Exactly.
Right. That becomes a style, don't
yes.
you think?
And it still is. I mean, the same people that I hold dear and pull close, I push away when I do
my
work.
So you need to work. Yeah. Absolutely.
Solitude is what I'm married to.
Yeah. You know, it's, my ex-husband, who's a musician, used to say... he would be working, you know, he'd be writing and all that. And he would say, you know, I don't want you in the room, but I'm glad you're in the house.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Exactly right. I mean, that was wonderful. That's a wonderful way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want anybody to go away.
Right.
I just
need... You need the space.
And it's not working space all the time.
No.
Because I have my studio. I mean, I come here and I get the work done.
Right.
But then there are times I need thinking space.
Yes.
So that's why I understand clearly what your former husband said. I mean, my friend, he understands clearly that. So there are times when I just need the space to expand the thoughts that are going to materialize.
Right. They're going to turn themselves into
yes.
the art.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I just tend to get quiet and move away, but I'm glad that he is in my life.
Yes, yes.
The metaphor for in the house.
Yes, yeah. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Or as Carol Burnett said, somebody asked her if she would marry again, and she said, sure, if he lives next door.
Yes.
Right?
I love that.
Don't you? I did too. Well, we
yes.
all of us do.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Okay, so we've been talking about art. You're a painter, yes?
Yes, I'm yes. a visual artist.
You're a visual artist. Do you want to talk about that for
okay,
me?
Okay, the reason I describe it a little differently is because yes. I also sculpt, I paint, I write, sure. I act.
Yes. So you have every right to call this art with a capital A.
Yeah, it's my whole being.
Yeah, right. Whatever form
it takes,
right?
I've written poetry that's been published.
Mm-hmm.
I love music, but that's the one thing that I can't get involved in because I'm not a performer in that sense, and I'm not a singer. But everything else, I love.
Well, okay. So, what are you doing right now?
Right, what projects am I working
yeah.
at the moment? There's a myriad of projects only because we're in an economy that does not allow me to do absolutely what I want to do every day, which would be to paint or write.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now I'm coming up with bigger ideas. And I have an idea for a project that not only helps me stay where I am in my life, but I launched the careers of other artists, and so I have a little television project that my son and I are working on, a reality TV project called Studio SRQ. I'm creating an art factory. This place is going to create art in all
yeah,
of its
forms.
It's
where it's produced.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so I will have art assistants who are both painters and non-painters. We will interact. It's unscripted. It should be fun. We're going to shoot a pilot here in the next couple of months. And my son, with all of his hopefully wonderful connections, will
find a way to get it on. Yeah, right. Yeah,
and if not, then that is my installment project. In other words, that at my exhibitions, there will be some...
A monitor.
Monitor, and
it'll show. Oh, it's great. It's great.
So
it'll be a work of art.
A work of art. Either way.
It's performance art.
That's right. And along with that, I have my first solo exhibition in Detroit, Michigan at the Charles H. Wright Museum of African American History and Culture. The oldest African American museum in the country.
When?
And that is 2011. We haven't picked the month yet, but it's 2011. And I have 66 new pieces that I am preparing already mentally. I have 50 of them done. I have 16.
Is it a theme?
It's called validation. And it's the validation of the sacred feminine spirit.
It's wonderful. I can't wait to see them.
And there, the concept keeps coming and growing and growing. And it's the hardest part about the artwork is the concept, is the thought. Doing it is not, it's not hard to me. It's coming up with what I'm going to do. Until I have some vision that give me the, because the title of my work generally comes after the vision.
Yeah, well, you're visual.
Yeah, because I'm extremely visual. Yeah. I mean, even in school, in order to learn math when I was a kid, I remember the teacher, you know, she would, I'm going to do something simple. Like she would say, Gail, one and one is what? And I'd have to look at her quizzically. And she'd say, okay, Gail, here's this apple and that's apple. I'm going to have two.
Yeah.
Do you know?
I do.
Yeah,
I
very
do.
Visual. Everything comes through my eyes.
Yes.
Everything. So even my son jokes with me because if I'm talking to him and there's a sound in his voice, I'll say, are you okay? You know, say, yes, Mom, I'm fine. I say, no, I can see your face. And he'll say, how can you see your face? I'll say, I hear you, but Mom sees what your face looks like when you're talking.
Yeah.
And he'll say, okay, Mom, well, it's just this or a little of that. And I'll say, I told you. So I can see.
Okay, so you should tell the listening audience your website, how they get in touch with you, because maybe somebody in Detroit is listening is going to want to show up at this event.
Yeah. Okay.
You know.
Well, we don't have the date for the event.
Well, it's all right.
I'm going to Detroit next month in November to look through the museum once again, and we're going to decide how I'm going to do things, and then they're going to tell me how the catalog's going to get done, and then we're going to come up with a concept for exact date. Okay. Here in Sarasota, they can find me through my website, which is www.fultonross, one word, FULTONROSS, like Sam, .com. Mm-hmm. And I have two websites, so they'll be able to enter one, or there's an older one and a newer one. And it also gives them contact information.
Mm-hmm.
I am represented here by a gallery, Alan Gallup Gallery. They're on 5th and Central. Mm-hmm. And they can find him through the phone book. But it's Alan Gallup Gallery. And I don't have an open studio in the sense that you can't just ring, you know, my bell and come in. That's why I have the dealer. I have actually 6 dealers around the country who represent me. And so I get work done that has to go to various dealers. The ones that represent my figurative work and the ones who represent my abstract work. And things go in various directions. But I love, you know, I love doing things in town. I have a foundation here that we raise money to give away to individual artists. We raise money to work with organizations. I get grants to do particular projects for at-risk kids. And that is a lot of people who come together, and we just do things like that. I stay pretty busy.
Yes, to state it understated,
exactly.
Like that.
Right.
Okay. All right, so is there anything I didn't ask you that I should have asked you?
No, I can't think of anything except that, you know, you have the art life that I have now, after over 40 years of being in it, it's harder now than it ever was.
Because
when I was younger and I knew exactly what I was going to do and how I was going to do it, there were fewer of us.
Ah, yes.
Just like before me in the 50s and the 60s, there were fewer. Everything is art and everybody's an artist. That's how it appears or it feels. So it makes it a little harder to constantly be creative and maintain whatever you think is unique about what you do, because we really are all pretty derivative of something else. Mm-hmm. So now they no longer sell my work at this point in my life. They place it. So when I say place it, it means that it goes in museums, it goes into billionaire collections, it goes in here, and I get a piece of that sale, not what most people think, because artists give up 50%.
Yeah, to be represented.
To be represented.
Yeah.
But that's not the hard part. The hard part is now that many people who would be the middle class buyer, which is the one that sustains my career, they're like me. They're having a hard time with their discretionary, funds. So I am very blessed in that I still make a good living. The problem is, at 62, what I thought would be easier.
Yeah. You figured you would be established now,
exactly.
And you could ride it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's actually harder, because the more well-known I become, more recognition I get in the art world, the less sales and the more debate and discussion around my work.
Oh, you become somebody to be analyzed,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So I'm loving it, and, I love it in one hand, and I find it difficult in the other. But I was talking to an artist much older than myself, who does very well now, very well, and been on the scene a long time in New York, and he said, that's the sign of success. And you have to get through it for a few years, and then
yes, you kick into the high
exactly,
gear, right?
And finally, all that debate and that
settles down.
And the people begin to buy on a grand scale, high end, and so you need to paint less to make more. And so I want those people who may be listening, who want to take their career forward, or artists, just understand that the struggle's not over. The struggle changes.
Yes. Yes.
And new challenges come up at a time when you want to rest a little.
Well, the other thing I think you're saying is that the life of an artist is not predictable.
No.
No. And if one wants a predictable life,
this is not it.
This is not it. But the other thing that I see over and over again is that people who become artists, they don't want a predictable life.
No, I don't want a predictable life.
No, they don't. You know, if you wanted to be, an accountant,
I would have done that.
You'd have done that, yes. Right. But you chose this thing which cannot possibly be predictable,
no.
Right?
And the beauty of it, at the end of a day, no matter in what condition I ended the day, whether I'm happy or, I'm always happy. I'm not always content.
Yeah.
I'm happy with what I do. I'm just not always content, and I do become frustrated. But no matter how that day ends, I can honestly tell you I have no regrets. I'm happy to, that I had some time in my studio, and I realized that in a time when people are struggling for so much, that my decision during the day might be whether I'm going to use cerulean blue or royal blue. That is a blessing. And so I try to give back, because you can't always give back money, but you can give back
something. Yes.
And I have learned that the more one's given, then the more life expects from them. And so all those cliches, all those things, it's really true. And as glamorous as the art world appears,
it's hard work.
Kind of a place, yes.
Right. It's a piece of work.
It's a piece of work. But I love it.
Yeah. I think you really answered this, but I'll say it in this way anyway. To talk a little bit about what it's like to have lived an entire life mm-hmm. dedicated to art.
Okay. It is extremely rewarding in the sense that it has been dedicated to the arts, but I happen to truly believe that artists are some of the most special people on earth. Not because that's what I do, but I see them younger, I see them older. There's a spirit to an artist, an understanding of what life is supposed to be about, even when they tend to believe in more in themselves than they believe in anything else. You know, we all have that time. We all have that time when we, especially artists, tend to think that what they do is the most important thing in the world. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they believe that because they believe in human beings. Mm-hmm. Okay, so if artists were running the world, it would be a very interesting place. So it's been quite something. It's also been very, very painful, too, in many ways, because without saying who, I actually have someone very close in my family who does not understand what I do and often says, you know, when are you going to stop playing around and get a job?
Still?
After 40 years, and I have to explain that I'm in museums, I'm in galleries, I'm in major collections, and she'll say, are you in the bank? Do you have money?
Let me guess who this is.
You know?
Right.
So,
right. Are you safe?
Yes. And let's put it this way. I go by the mirror every day and I look more and more
like her. That's a prize.
Yes, yeah, right. So, right. You know, and you say to yourself, my goodness, you know,
when is she going to get it?
When is she going to get that one?
Right.
You know, you have those days when you want to do something that requires real money.
Yeah, right.
And you can't, because even a bank doesn't always take you seriously. You know, you can't go into the bank on a bank loan and write artist.
Yeah, right.
That's like writing jazz musician.
Yes.
They kind of look at you like,
yeah, right.
So, you know, you write artist, designer, and then you work with this and you work with that. But
right.
I also wish that I could pay more attention to details. I really have a mental deficit for someone who's so visual when it comes to some details. I cannot stand to have to sit and cross the T's and dot the I's.
Yeah, it's a different skill.
Yeah, and I wish that, you know, somebody would take
all that away from you. I know.
I said to some friends that a table once, I just don't think I should ever have to pay a mortgage or rent. I think all artists should be just given that. She said, artists, Gail, just artists? I said, no, I know, you know, everybody in the world should be able to have. I said, but I think housing, all human beings should be a gift.
I do too.
If you're born, you should have I'm not talking about a mansion.
You should just not have to worry about where you're sleeping.
Yeah, just don't worry about where you're going to sleep and go to the bathroom.
You know, I'm thinking, just when you were talking about that, you were saying, you know, that artists, you know, think that what they're doing is the most important thing. And I think one couldn't do it if one didn't think that.
Absolutely.
It's too hard. It's too hard. So that is how artists manage to get through life
exactly.
is by believing that what they're doing is really important.
It's really important. Even when it looks to other people like you have taken advantage. I can remember in my early days, you know, I'd have no money and friends would loan you money and loan you this. And, you know, I'd be thinking, well, okay, should I buy a can of tuna fish or some titanium white,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
And then over the years, you know, you're talking to these friends and they'll say things like, well, you never paid me back. And then I'm going, paid you back?
Right.
How much do I owe you? And then they would say, well, right now I don't really remember, but Gail.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, see, I didn't think about paying you back. It's not an excuse.
Right. No, it's just the reality.
For being rude. Money's not in my consciousness on that level.
No.
I mean, we need it. I always make it. But
that's not what it's about.
And I'm not rich. I make a living.
Right.
But what I have is I have the richness of being.
Yes. You have yourself.
I have myself. And the work has brought me a lot of things. So people say, well, you lived here. You're all over the world. Those are grants that I applied for.
Mm-hmm.
Opportunities that come from the work.
Right.
I mean, I have a place in Italy that I can go to every single year from June until September, because very good clients in Italy, that's how they want to thank me. Now I have to get over there. I have to feed myself.
Right.
The point is, when people say, well, you're in Italy. Yeah, but I'm not in Italy shopping for Prada.
Right.
Once I get there, I'm working.
You're working. Right. And in addition, you got that through your work.
Yes.
It came to you from something that you produced. That
exactly.
Right.
It's called the perks, or some of the good side, the good part of this business.
Right.
And that's why I say I absolutely have not suffered a thing. But
that doesn't mean it hasn't been hard.
Right. And that's it doesn't right. mean that you didn't hurt somebody along the way who thought you should think more about them than your work.
Yes. Right. That's a, you know, that's a very, very important piece, I think. Yeah, when I was practicing in Los Angeles, the only people I treated were writers and artists.
Oh.
And I started an institute, the Writers and Artists Institute, and our logo was, you know, for most people their job is what they do, for writers and artists their job is what they are. But all those people for whom their job is what they do, they don't understand Mm-mm. what it means for your work to be who you
no,
are.
No, they don't.
No.
And that's the part that sometimes is painful for an artist.
Right.
You know, you never, because what you see sometimes in the eyes of people you care about
right.
is disappointment.
Yes, right, right.
And that's a killer for me. I don't like to see disappointment when it has something to do with me. Now, it could be the fact that, I don't think that has anything to do with the fact that I'm an artist. I'm a Leo. So someone
oh, all that hair. I yes. see all that hair. Right? She's got this gorgeous mane of hair.
That, you know, and
yes, right.
So I think that has something to do more with ego, but the point is that is all, I mean, in my life,
yeah, there
I
are
very little of it.
There are artists who don't care.
I know.
You know, I mean, who for whom the work is
all that. All they that, don't care.
That's right.
See, I do care.
I know.
And
it's a challenge.
It's a challenge.
It's a challenge to care. Because you have to balance that yeah. all the time.
All the time.
All the time.
All the
yeah,
time.
Yeah, and that's something, you know, that most of the people that I have interviewed haven't talked about. Mm-hmm. But it really is true. If your work is compelling, and that's the only people I talk to,
yep.
right, then there is going to come a point where it's going to get between, in the way of what somebody else wants from you.
It really does.
It does.
Yeah,
it does.
And that's the part that's very hard to explain
to anybody who doesn't get it.
To anybody who does not get it.
Right, right.
You know, it's almost like it's a question of your integrity. Yet integrity is very important to me because the integrity of what I do is who I am.
Right.
You know, it comes from here. So if you miss something, you miss the meeting, you miss the payment, you miss
their birthday.
Yeah. You know, where is your integrity?
Oh,
where
my
is
God.
Your value?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, system. It's where it belongs
yeah.
with my work.
Yeah. But, you know,
yeah,
all,
yeah, yeah, I see
we're
it.
All trying to get through life the best way we can.
That's right.
I, you know, without hurting anybody, without malice. So I just burrow into what I do. Unfortunately, I know I'm living an earthly experience and there are things that I'm supposed to do that, you know, I have to come out of my thoughts to do. Well, the other thing I realize is I was, you know, I was a mother very young.
Right.
So I have always worked at being considerate and thoughtful and being there, being present in other people's lives for
right.
them.
Right.
And so when I'm accused of not doing that, I take it hard.
Yes.
I do
yeah.
take that.
And I think that is really, it's interesting that I don't think it's come up before. Really, that dichotomy, that dilemma
mm-hmm.
of being somebody for whom the work is primary,
mm-hmm.
but still being a human being, you know, and for whom relationships are essential,
yes.
right? And balancing that with people who don't necessarily understand the dilemma.
The dilemma.
It's really painful.
It is.
It's really painful.
And I'll just tell you this. My father who was my very first influence, committed suicide.
Oh, my dear.
At 56. Now, I'm going on 63. So I've lived past it.
Yeah.
And although that to me, for years, you know, I harbored this anger. I mean, I loved him dearly. So, but I mean, I was a little, you know, I was angry.
Yeah, no
to me, that's the most selfish act. And as I've gotten older,
yeah,
I still find it a selfish act because all the things he missed, all the times we missed him, I understand. Because he was a perfectionist in an imperfect world. He was a frustrated artist. And he had all that art temperament, the mood, the depth, the need for solitude. And he was married with three daughters and a demanding wife, and his work was demanding. So, you know, I understand, and in our talks, my spiritual talks, I have forgiven him. But the beauty of it is I have heard him say to me in my quiet moments when I'm having those times when I'm thinking deeply that I've done a very good job in understanding my presence in this life on, that's why I say, the earthly experience and my spiritual quest. And if you balance those, and it's very hard to do, and I work with that every day, that's why solitude is important, because mm-hmm. that's how you do it. It helps you understand and how to keep moving forward without letting life's turmoils and trials come over your head. Because most artists can get lost easily, mm-hmm. very easily, which is why, you know, some get lost to drugs or alcohol or violence and mentally. Mm-hmm. Because you're raw. You're a raw spirit. You're just raw.
And because this is not a culture that has any interest in supporting it.
No.
I know. What I've been thinking when you were talking about your dad is the, as I said, you know, the thrust of the show that I do is people discovering themselves, becoming right. themselves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a therapist, I know that most people are not themselves.
No.
They're some version that they thought they had to be, or somebody it's told bad. Them they were, or whatever it was. And your father, unfortunately, was not able to be who he was.
Not even close.
No, that's right. And the further the away from the person that you are, that you're having to act like, the more difficult and painful it is to be.
To be, because who right. are you?
Who are
you? And that's what I realized now.
Right. And so, I mean, that's the whole thrust of this show, yes. is to talk about, you know, what gets between us mm-hmm. and being who we really are,
yes.
and how we can get there.
Yes.
And when I talk to people like you, yes. then I know that whoever is listening to what it actually sounds like mm-hmm. when you are who you are.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
And it's a great gift.
Yes.
It's
and
a great gift.
It is. I always tell people I'm favored because...
No, I meant you're a great gift to them.
Oh, thank you. I was going to say it's been a gift to me that I am able to balance the process because I know I'm not doing that by myself, which is why I tell you that I, you know, there's a power that is empowering that helps me do this.
Yeah.
Because there's just no way. When I'm quiet, that's when I understand that power. And some people call that power in silence. Mm-hmm. It's just the silence so you can hear yourself think.
Yes.
And therefore you don't struggle with the thoughts because somebody's around
yes.
demanding from you. I work really, 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 really hard at staying true to myself.
Yes.
Because I can't, no matter who is important in my life, and there are many people, I can't be anything to them if I'm not first true to myself.
No, it's the price your father paid.
Yes, exactly right. So if I, like I said earlier, if I feel as though I've disappointed, I tell people, if they say, make me feel that way, I explain, first and foremost, I'm sorry. Because obviously I didn't do that with intention. Will I make them feel that way again? If we both live long enough, I'm sure I will. But it did not come from any
malice.
Place of malice. And if it's something I can fix, I fix. But if it's something I can't, I tell them, I can't fix that one. So you either have to get over it, or you know, so we can keep going. But I have to forget it, because if I don't forget it, knowing I can't fix it, then, you know, it's going to hurt me. So sometimes it goes in a painting, you know, it goes there.
Yeah, F. Scott Fitzgerald is supposed to have said, this relationship, it was really awful and it didn't last long, but I got a paragraph out of it.
Yeah, that's it. That's what I get. Don't even go there. I know the paintings I painted based on some things, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
And so that's the beauty of the release.
Yeah. But again, it's because you are who you are, yeah. and you use everything you are.
Everything.
You know.
Everything.
And that's I truly believe that is the goal
yeah.
of living.
Yeah.
You know that it's because as a therapist I have had to watch over and over again people living lives that have nothing to do with them.
Exactly.
You know, and the pain that...
They suffer
for that.
Including disease.
All kinds of... Yes, exactly. The pain that you suffer from being who you are in a world that may or may not like it is greatly better than trying to be something...
That you're not.
That's exactly right.
That's exactly right.
So you are really... You are who I was. this has been so wonderful.
Well, thank you. And you're very calming, so it's easy to talk to you.
Well, thank you very much.
And had I not known what you did earlier as a profession,
yeah.
I certainly would have asked you had you something to do with that.
Ah, that's nice. Thank you.
Because you're open. Your expression is open to listening, and you're not listening on a superficial level. And that's very clear. So it's easy to talk.
Thank you very much.
Oh, this has been as gratifying for me as I hope it was for you.
It's wonderful, and I am, I'm happy.
Okay.
You know, I really do believe that that interaction should be mutually beneficial.
Oh, yeah. Or else somebody should just pick up
and go. Take their disappointment and go.
Or at least stay away for a few days. Yes, indeed.
Thank you, Gail Holcross.
You're welcome, man.
Well, I told you this was a lot of fun for me, and I think it was a lot of fun for Gail. And the reality is that when you're talking to somebody who's really there, who is really themselves, who's deeply connected to their essential self, they're not having to waste a lot of energy keeping parts of themselves secret, private, undercover, which is the word I like to use for it. They're not having to work at being somebody, impressing you, or making a point, or demonstrating this or that. You know, it's truly what you see is what you got, or what you got is what's really there. When you're in the presence of someone like that, the spontaneity pretty much always makes for fun, for delight, for exuberance. And you see that so clearly with Gail. And you know that it's there in her work, because when she's working, she's coming right from her essential self. And that's, of course, why her work sells, because everybody can see that it's not phony, it's not, what is the word I want? The opposite of spontaneous, right? The opposite of real. Her work is spontaneous and real, just like her. So, I just want to say thank you to Gail, not only for doing the interview, but for being who she is and being so much a representation of what it is I hope we all are aiming at. I realize that I didn't get an opportunity to tell you anything about me, so I'm just going to give you my website now. It's The Lynn Show, T-H-E-L-Y-N-N-E, don't leave out the E, S-H-O-W, thelynnshow.com, and you can find out anything you want to know about me. Pretty much everything about me is up on that website, including podcasts from most of the shows, although I know that my web guys have fallen down on the job and not all the podcasts are up yet. Still, I cannot end this show without thanking Josh Hackney. Josh Hackney, who comes here and makes sure that this show sounds as good as it can sound, corrects whatever is correctable about what I have done, has taught me everything that I know about recording and editing, knows everything there is to know about recording, editing, IT, computing, internet, electronics, and manages to be kind and responsible and dependable in addition. So if you've got questions or issues with any of these things, you know you want Josh. And you can get him by going to thelynnshow.com. And as always, I hope that you got something you can use from this show. Something that interested you, something that amused you, something that turned you on, even something that irritated you, if it's something that will bring you back. Because I will be here next week, same time, same station, and as always, I sure hope that you will be too.
See, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't